Welcome to PMA Takes on Tech, the podcast that explores the problems, solutions, people, and ideas that are shaping the future of the produce industry. I'm your host, Bonnie Estes, the Vice President of Technology at the Produce Marketing Association, and I've spent years in the ag tech sector, so I can attest it's hard to navigate this ever-changing world. Thanks for joining us and allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. The food service segment of the produce industry has been hit particularly hard during the COVID pandemic. The complete and swift shutdown of restaurants, schools, hotels, and pretty much everywhere people met outside their homes to eat shook the industry. This resulted in oversupply and chaos in the chain. Planning and forecasting on how to move forward is extremely difficult. Today, we are speaking to Jen G. Wildler at Vesta Food Service about the effect on her business. Later, we will speak to AgTools and Hazel Technologies about technologies aiding the food service industry. Let's hear from Jen G. at Vesta Food Services.
Vesta Food Service is a distribution company, and we're dedicated to providing solutions to the food service industry in particular. We have facilities and distribution throughout California and large portions of Arizona and Nevada. We supply a full line of fresh produce items as well as specialty grocery items. We typically carry about 7,500 unique SKUs in our facilities.
Great.
As to my role, I cover a lot within the company. Branding, marketing, communications is all in my purview, as well as community engagement. I have a category development team whose job is really to take a look at adding new products, new lines, new vendors that provide value to the customers. They also provide education and product training to our sales team and to our customers. And then I also have a key account management team. What they do is they really take care of some of our regional chains, and they create the systems and processes that are unique to each one of those chains. Again, providing the unique solutions for the company, whether that's logistics, product solutions, labor solutions, et cetera. So that's pretty much where you'll find me working within the company.
Busy times. And you've had a little bit of background with the Produce Marketing Association as well, right?
I have. I've started very early in my career, great opportunity to network and learn more about the industry, not having grown up in the produce industry. So wanted to just learn more about it. When I started, PMA was a great way to do that. Volunteered for committees, served many years on the board of directors for PMA, three different terms, and then served as the PMA chairperson. Amazing opportunity, 2017 to 2018. It was just such a wonderful opportunity to work with my industry peers, some amazing people, to come up with the new strategic vision for PMA at the time, which was bringing together the global produce and floral communities to grow a healthier world, which we talk about a lot right now, especially, and really bringing that vision alive through the different focus areas, whether it was demand creation, technology, which you know, Bonnie, sustainability, talent, global connections is definitely a focus, and then, as always, the science and safety. To be able to help articulate that and be able to help PMA bring some of that alive during my chairmanship was just a fantastic time. I learned, I grew so much through that time period, and I'm so grateful to the other board members that certainly helped make that happen and were so generous with their experience and their expertise with me at the time.
Great. Yeah, you've had a great impact on the organization, and your support was part of the reason I was hired. So thank you for that. but I think not just particular to me, but just your realization that technology was a really important part of our industry going forward. So I appreciate that and recognize that impact. So COVID has hit the food service industry super hard. And the last time we talked, I think about a week and a half ago, things were starting to open up a little bit and you were a little more hopeful and things were moving again. And now things are starting to contract a little bit. So can you tell us what's happening in your business right now?
Sure. So you are absolutely right. And we're such an optimistic, hopeful industry, aren't we? Yeah. So even a slight uptick, we get very excited. And that's certainly how I felt the last time that we talked. Things continue to open up a bit more, albeit very slowly. We still obviously have a lot of challenges. You're right. The recent rollbacks to in-room dining, they are damaging. I think the restaurants that had mechanisms in place early on to be successful with takeout and delivery did well, and they now find themselves building upon that success. We certainly have some chain customers that, gosh, are at 85 to 90% now, which we're very happy about.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. But I wouldn't say that's the majority. We have plenty of customers who haven't reopened, have shuttered for good, or were planning on reopening for 4th of July weekend and due to the rollbacks had to shut back down again. And, you know, for those who are familiar with the supply chain and how it works, they won't be surprised. But for those who maybe don't live it every day, you know, in order to open up for 4th of July weekend, they ramped up their inventories, and so did we. And they brought back employees, you know, in anticipation of the increase in business, and so did we. So to have to take another hit on inventory is devastating. To have to tell employees that you have to lay them off again because that anticipated bump in business isn't coming yet. That there's at least a 3-week delay, and we don't know, maybe even more. It's not looking good. It's just heartbreaking. So you're right. From the last time we spoke, there's been a change, but overall, we're still optimistic that things will continue to open up, and customers will continue to be very creative in the ways that they find to get food to the customers, get food out into the communities. And then we talked about as well, we're one of the contract awardees on the USDA Farmers to Families Box Program. And our contract got extended through August. Okay. And that has had such a positive impact on our business as well as our growers and our immediate communities in that we're able to help get food out to families in need. So that has been helpful. And that was a bit of good news.
Oh, that is good news. So you had mentioned to me that your job, when everything's going normally, is to solve the problems of the chef. Can you explain what that looks like and what that looks like normally, and then how you're trying to kind of handle that now in whatever way that you can?
Absolutely. So we have a very diverse customer base. Our customer base covers everything from the independent high-end restaurants to regional chains, business and institution, colleges, hotels, sports venues. It runs the gamut, and each one of those segments and then each individual customer is going to have their own unique challenges in reaching whatever their goals are for their organization. So those solutions can be just in sourcing, whether it's sourcing the particular items that they need for their menus, or even organizational goals. You know, some of the businesses may want to purchase only organic, or they may want to purchase, you know, most of their product from locally grown sustainable food systems. So there are some things on the sourcing side that we do to provide solutions. And then, you know, depending on their facilities and how much product they can hold and how quickly they need to get products, some of those solutions are logistics. You know, sometimes we're picking up, some of the chains have commissaries where they're producing some of the items needs to be combined with the product that we're sourcing for them. So we're setting up some unique logistical, right, solutions for them so that they're getting just-in-time delivery and the freshest product available. And then some of it's labor. You know, whether it's packing in smaller sizes or sorting the product. You know, we have customers who need bean sprouts, for example. to be exactly 5 inches long, and that's it. And we've got our rulers out, and our team is out there measuring. Could be green beans, could be cherry tomatoes. I don't think that that's necessarily unique to us. We certainly pride ourselves on the level of service that we provide. I believe that's something that food service distributors across the country do in terms of service.
So how do you think your business will change, your business specifically, and then also just the industry and food service coming out of COVID? What will look different and how will things change?
I think that this particular crisis was so devastating across the board that there's been much more understanding throughout the supply chain.
Even from consumers, right? I mean,
yes.
I think consumers have never thought about the food supply chain, and they are now.
Correct, because it was such a big shutdown, and there have been more stories written about the supply chain than ever before. Mm-hmm. And some of it, you know, eye-catching, because they're accompanied by photos of crops, you know, being left in the fields or milk being dumped. And so people are paying more attention. But in particular to the food service industry segment, I believe that there's more open communication from the grower all the way to the customer. An understanding of how each one of us has been impacted. And then as things start to open up, the understanding of the open communication that needs to take place in order for us all to succeed. So very early on, for example, we were very clear to our customers in constant communication what was happening with the growers and the processors and the decisions that the growers and processors were having to make, not only to deal with COVID-19 and employee safety, but also planning for business sustainability. So there are going to be fewer plantings of the food service SKUs. And once food service comes back, you're going to have more demand for less supply of those items, so that you need to be one, more communicative about when you're opening up and your menu changes, but also more flexible about the specs that you're willing to accept and be able to use in your menus. So there's a lot of that kind of open dialogue happening. And then we're trying to do our best to communicate back to our growers when our customers are coming back and at what percentage they're coming back. That has been a great challenge. I wouldn't say we found the magic algorithm that allowed us to be accurate in doing that. Frankly, that's something that continues to be a daily challenge right now, but we have a focus on it and we're doing our best to communicate back to the grower so that they can have some data to make better decisions. Big joke around here is there's just not enough data to do good maths and make good decisions right now. And we're doing our best to collect that data and share it as much as possible. And I just find there's more openness on either side of the supply chain to do that.
That's great. That leads me to my last question, which you kind of touched on, is what are some of the specific issues that you're facing where technology might help going forward? And certainly forecasting is, like you just mentioned.
Yes, forecasting is one of them. That is something that we, you know, it's not new to the food service distributor. We regularly use forecasting to create PARS levels within the company, but it's, I think, never been more critical that we get it right, because none of us can take another big hit. We can't take the kind of inventory losses that we took at the beginning of March and survive. So forecasting from the customer side is one part of it. Inventory management is certainly another one. Everyone's keeping much tighter inventories because we just can't afford it. We don't know. In our case, we're definitely, our inventory management planning, we are considering another shutdown. And some people may say that's not going to happen. You know, the states can't afford it. And yet the rollback, I think, is evidence that it's very much a possibility and that it does have to be considered in your inventory management plans. So forecasting, inventory management, another thing the rollback brings to light is that anything we can do in terms of shelf life and helping us kind of keep inventory in good condition for longer than maybe we have up to this point would be extremely helpful. As customers open up, they're not able to take full cases. If your dining room is only able to seat 25% of what you normally did, you're just not going to use full cases. In the past, at the grower processor level, when we asked for smaller pack sizes, so that because we don't have the labor in house right now to provide those services that we used to provide to the customers, if we could purchase them in smaller pack sizes, but affordably, and I know that that's the key. It's not that the capacity isn't there to do that. It's that typically when we ask for the smaller pack sizes, it pushes the price up so high that it's no longer a viable option. The customer will say, okay, I'll take the case and throw half away, which is not what we want happening in the supply chain. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there. The learnings, the pain that we went through in losing so much inventory, I think there's opportunity there from a technology standpoint to provide some solutions. So again, the forecasting, inventory management, packaging, and shelf life are the top issues that come to mind. And then labor would be another one.
Great. Well, thank you so much for giving us a view of your world. And I think you kind of sit in a spot that most people don't get to see what's really happening with food service and the impact.
We will now turn to two technology solutions that can help solve some of the problems that Jinju talked about. First, AgTools, a data subscription service that allows for better forecasting and decision-making. And then second, we will jump into a conversation with Hazel Technologies and Mission Produce about increasing product longevity. Let's hear from Martha Montoya, CEO of AgTools.
What we do is we literally gather data from all type of government entities, first, second, and third, fourth layer of data to be able to bring it into a dashboard that gives us the insights of what really is happening across the market, not only in the United States, but Mexico and the Americas, on sourcing, where products are coming from. After many years, I decided that we needed to find a way to see things faster and forecast. Uh-huh. The fun thing about this whole world is that all of us in the industry kind of know what's going to happen. We just don't have the tools to confirm what we know. And we just need that little extra element. So what we do is we make sure that the AgTools brings you historical data in seconds, because we have a platform that operates 1 billion transactions per second. You have 25 years of historical data. So you're able to, as a buyer or in the food service industry, you can see where things are coming from and how much volume is coming from, when is the beginning of the season or the downturn of the season for freshness, and be able to turn around and either tell your supplier, the large suppliers, to myself as a restaurant or as a buyer myself of the commodity, be able to say, can we start sourcing strawberries from this region now because they're best? They're fresh and they're less expensive. I think that this C19 has created that need of transparency, of understanding where anything comes from, even for this whole program of the farm to fork program or the family program, where sourcing is where do we find the products, and it's kind of people calling people, but no longer. It's in one little dashboard that tells you exactly where things are coming from and where, because it's all government data.
So that's where you get your data. It's mostly government data that you can
It's all government data adjusted to a couple of things. And there's always a misunderstanding on the world of data. The whole government, not only here, but all over the world, they're continuously updating data in our industry, in what we call the fresh market, every second. And by the time that we get these quote-unquote reports that we used to get, the general scope of what happened, they might be upgrades that we don't see, like crossing the borders or processing plants or packaging houses that put out 3 truckloads, but really was 2 because one didn't leave. So the following morning at 6 a.m., it's revamped. So we can continuously, as a buyer, me as a food service company, I can see literally, is it moving more from the Orosi side? Is it moving more from the Fresno area? Because now I can see where the volumes are coming from and plan better. And then I think the second and most important part of forecasting, which our tool does, is the market movements. And we have 67 variables that impact at any time our buying decision. So the tool does that thinking process for you, whether it's a storm on the way to the distribution center or to my door or through in the process, or whether it's an exchange rate and all of a sudden Argentina went down and the blueberries are $5 versus $14 in Michigan. You see what I mean? All these variables are anytime working, and this tool to tell you best place to source in the next month, 3 months, 6 months is from this area or at this price or these volumes. And so it helps us make better decisions to avoid losses, which is what we are trying to do right now, avoid the losses, the financial losses. I understand food, but at the end of the day, in our industry, the P&L is important.
Right. One of the things that you were talking about, the different variables that we talked about last time I spoke to you, was that there are all of these questions that everyone who's buying should be asking. There's all these variables that people should be looking at. And whether they're using your tools or not, a lot mm-hmm. of people, you'd mentioned that you talked to someone who got up every morning and they looked at like 10 different sources to try to get a sense of, you know, what's the weather and what's the exchange rate and what are all these things that are happening. But the advantage of a tool like yours is that there's so many variables, no one can be watching that many, and they should be. So your tool actually allows them in one place to look at all these variables at once and try to, instead of trying to hold it all in your head, which no one person could do.
There's right? no way. Not only that, Bonnie, the more important part also is that we need to bring the new generations, and it's a tough industry. It's a little bit of a chaotic industry sometimes, because it's come almost like a panic reactive mode. And so when young people come, either they love it or they like, I don't think I want to do this kind of thing. And so the tool, and we have already young users loving it and outperforming the seasoned ones, buyers, because they're able to see it in seconds. So they can see where the tomatoes are coming from, where the cantaloupes are going, where did they sell more, and in seconds understand. So we are able to now train more people underneath us. We love our industry and we really want to bring more people, but we need to give them the tools to love our industry and not be scared of it and are screaming, hey, what happened with the truck? Why did we buy it at this price or that price, and so on and so forth, right?
Yeah. No, that's a great perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's almost like a retention tool or a enhancing tool for the generations. And we always have had the gurus of our commodities across the world and the United States, the one who knew everything asparagus, the one who knows everything at cantaloupes, right?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We're grabbing all those brains and putting it in this tool.
Yeah. No, oh, that's great.
Before they go to play golf.
So is it a subscription service? Is that how it works? Is that how people?
Yeah, it's a license. And we went through UC Davis research to make it so accessible, knowing that the common pain across our industry is thin margins. So we made it very simple, $199 per month per commodity. Oh. And I always say, you save one truckload, you pay the membership.
Yeah.
And that's our thinking process.
Yeah.
And nothing fancy, nothing unusual, very simple. Not that we're not smart people, it's just we need simple 67 things to tell us in seconds, what should I do with that truck to cross it or to send it or to pick it up again.
Well, it takes very smart people to make complicated things look simple, so.
That's for sure, for sure.
And, so what do you think a post-COVID supply chain is going to look like? And do you think people are finally going to rely more on data to make decisions? Whereas before it was more phone calls and spreadsheets and doing their own work. But do you think going through this process is going to help people rely more on this type of data and these types of tools?
There are two things I'm seeing a trend. One, the grown-ups are starting to understand that they have to get in, or some of them are saying, you know what, I'm done, I've done my job, I move on. And I heard 50 plus people actually retiring. taking advantage of the quote unquote situation to move on. Because absorbing data is not easy, and we all are living this. I mean, we are doing a crash course on anything technology, but definitely digitalization is crucial. Worldwide digitalization of our industry is crucial. People just don't understand, and having done this globally, how any farmer in Filipinas can impact our supplier anytime, or how a supplier down in Sinaloa will impact us. So we knew it, we kind of saw it, but it was slow waves. Now the waves are faster. So we need these tools to understand faster what's going on. And I think the biggest one is that we used to just plant based on the request of the buyers, and we in the food service industry, we need to start looking a little bit more on matching supply and financials. Mm-hmm. That is one tricky one that finally starting to, after these couple of years of going in this process, finally the industry starting to understand that what we produce on the farm or the production packing houses has to match when we get out to the market based on the market itself, to avoid the losses that we have been encountering for decades. No, and that is where the forecasting is so crucial, matching the market against the production and or even the planting. We have customers that are already planting based on historical data of markets, and they are growing. One of our biggest customers has grown this pandemic time 280% because he's matching broccoli growth against market demand.
We just talked to Jinju Wilder about the many issues she has faced in the food service industry. And one of the issues is around product longevity with all of the changes and hiccups in the supply chain, given in the opening and the closing of food service establishments and all the up and downs there. We're now going to talk to Hazel Technologies and Mission Produce about a collaboration that should help with product longevity in the supply chain. Welcome to Aiden Moat, CEO and co-founder from Hazel Technologies, and Patrick Cortez, Senior Director of Business Development from Mission Produce. Great to have you guys.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
All right. So first, Aiden, why don't you tell us about Hazel Technologies and what you do?
Absolutely. So I am I'm the CEO and one of the co-founders of Hazel. We formed the company in 2015 with the pretty direct mission of using new sustainable biochemistry and biotechnology to stop food waste by reducing spoilage in the storage and transit process. So we've developed a number of products over the years, but our core focus has always been to use, you know, very eco-friendly, highly sustainable, very cheap technologies, put them in the hands of the world's food suppliers, growers, packers, et cetera. And by providing them control over critical processes in perishable food, help them, you know, keep their stuff fresh for the longest possible duration and move from point A to point B with a minimum of spoilage, with the ultimate goal of trying to tackle the massive food waste problem that's emerged in the market. So that's who we are and what we do.
So where are you in the commercialization process? I know you have a number of partnerships and clients, but kind of, are you out in the market completely? Are you still doing development? Kind of, where are you?
No, we're fully in the market. We're fully commercialized. I think it's a great question because the scale of agriculture is just so huge that even though I can say, you know, unabashedly, hey, we're deploying millions of units a year in 12 different countries. Even that's, you know, not big enough, and we're going to keep growing. But no, we're fully commercial. I think this year we're planning on treating a total of about 3 billion pounds of produce. That's we're on track for it. And, you know, based off of the analytical work that we do and the studies that we conduct with our customers, you know, we see that translating to about 500 million pounds, give or take, of produce saved from going to waste. And so that's a
wow.
Pretty... We got a lot more to go. You know, it's a much, much bigger world than that. But so far, we've been growing to meet that challenge. So we're out there. We got a couple of flagship products already taking heavy traction in the market. We've got new product pipeline coming up over the next couple of years. You're going to be seeing a lot of new innovations from us, as well as the stable of stuff we've already put out there.
Wow, that's amazing. And are you mostly in the U.S. right now? Have you started expanding into other geographies?
I would say our principal territories are really the Americas as a general. Okay. So we've got, you know, certainly North American presence, mostly in the U.S., a fair amount in Mexico now. We do a lot of business out of a number of South American countries. But yeah, the next big phase for us is really the global development piece. So we're active in New Zealand and Australia. We're getting active in Japan. We're getting active in India, the EU, South Africa, quite a number of other countries. So within the next, I think, 3 to 5 years, you know, you'll really see us in more like 30 or 40 countries. And so we're trying to really tackle some of those global supply chain problems, not just the ones here at home.
Yeah, it's really amazing the need for that right now. I've been talking to a couple of companies in Australia right now, and one of their biggest issues is because there's no flights coming in and out. You know, I didn't realize how much food was carried in the bottom of commercial airlines. And so there's just a real problem with not getting product in and out on a regular basis as much. So really the need of having things that extend that shelf life and keep things fresh is super important during these times as well.
Yeah. And, you know, that's really been, and honestly, Patrick can speak to this pretty heavily because of Mission's, you know, very international presence. But I think that's part of the importance of having these types of partnerships between tech providers and supply chain folks, people that are actually out there moving crop from place to place, because there's so many challenges to be solved that we really have to get in under the hood and think about these individual international opportunities and all of these different supply chains. So that's been it's been a real benefit to us to be able to work with somebody like Mission that has a lot of experience in those kinds of supply chains. And I think that's good for us and good for the world.
Great transition. So as I've talked about on this podcast a number of times, is that technology adoption really does come through collaboration, like you said, and working with the industry. And that's the way that we're going to get technology adopted, and that's how we're going to make an impact. So we also have with us, as I mentioned, Patrick Cortez from Mission Produce. So before we launch into the collaboration, Patrick, why don't you tell me just a little bit about Mission Produce and who you are.
Sure, Vonnie. Thank you for having us in this conversation, which I think is very, very important. But Mission Produce, we are the largest grower, packer, shipper of fresh Hass avocados in the world. We're the largest grower in Peru. And, you know, we pride ourselves on innovation, supply chain, service, all of the benchmarks that our customer base is expecting for us. We have the world's most advanced avocado network with 9 ripening centers in North America. We've got a sales office and ripening center in Holland, operations in China. I mean, you know, our reach is to be global and expansive. And we're a very competitive company. We like to position ourselves as a top produce brand. And you can't do that without innovation. You can't do that without service. You can't do it without source, and you can't do it without collaborations like the one we have with Hazel. We continually know that if we don't innovate, you know, we're going to get caught by the competition, and that's not a position. That's not in our DNA. It's not our culture. So as you can tell, we're very competitive and very much want to continue to win at what we're doing, in addition to doing what's right for the world. You know, we're very serious about making sure we work to leave the world a better place than how we found it. And what we're doing with Hazel, it goes a long way in trying to help achieve that.
So Patrick, why don't you tell us a little bit about the relationship, how it came about, kind of what's going on with the two companies right now?
Yeah, so I think we probably got together, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. And what really intrigued us by what Aiden and Hazel are doing was not only the technology, the ability to extend the shelf life, but also the ability to incorporate it virtually anywhere in our supply chain. I mean, that was as critical. You know, at the end of the day, the avocado supply chain is extremely complex. When you look at California, Mexico, Peru, South Africa, you name it, it's very challenging, the logistics of getting avocados from place to place, as it is with a lot of produce commodities. We're not alone in that space. But we also found that there's value in trying to extend the shelf life. At the retail level, you know, reducing waste, which reduces the carbon footprint, but also affects the bottom line of the financials. And the food service space, where food cost is so critical to every operator out there, now more than ever, the ability to buy avocados and have confidence that they're going to last until you need them, until those sales come through, is valuable to the bottom line of the business. And so when we combine all of that and we look at the way Hazel integrates into our supply chain and delivers results, it was a virtual no-brainer.
That's great. So can you talk about what the relationship is and how you're working together and what's happening going forward?
Sure. Yeah. So we have launched a product for fresh Hass avocados called Avolast. And we are in partnership together with Hazel doing this in a joint manner. And obviously they're working closely with our R&D team to provide the right quality and spec. And Aiden obviously can touch a little bit more on that. And so with Avolast, what we're able to do is extend the shelf life of both hard avocados and then also for the food service space, ripe avocados. We've been able to achieve anywhere, depending on the seasonality of the fruit, 2 to 4 days of added ripe shelf life, which is massive in all sectors. It's huge in the retail sense. It's huge in the food service sense. And the other thing that we've been able to do is we've also been able to extend the internal quality of the avocado. So, you know, take it for a practical application at home. You know, if you've left something on the window too long and it feels really mushy and you think, oh man, there's no way it's going to be good. We've time and time again shown that we can still cut that avocado and it still cuts clean and still tastes great. And it's, you still get the benefit of it. So regardless of what sector you're in, there's value add to what we're doing along the way. In addition to potentially opening up new supply chains, you know, getting from Peru to India isn't easy. And so something like Hazel helps us open up new markets, which in turn grows the category as a whole.
Yeah, Vani, you can think of Hazel and Mission as kind of the horse and the cart, right? So, you know, you've got a company that's already got a long and prestigious history of very high quality fruit. And then we come along and we provide a little bit of extra tech on top of that in order to ensure, you know, that it's just at all times the best eating experience possible from an avocado that you get. So I think that's the best way of describing the partnership.
That's great. So just out of curiosity, can you get a little technical with us here, Aiden, on like, how does it work?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So the way that all of Hazel's products work, and Avolast is a fine example of this, is we provide an atmospheric control that allows the crop allows us to regulate the metabolism of the crop. And extend its shelf life, you know, during the storage and transit process, but also after that storage and transit process as well. So in this case, we're using a technology that's been referred to generally as ethylene inhibition, which is a bit different from the approach of the industry in ethylene management, sort of with the fan type systems or the absorber type systems. In this case, we're actually using our sachet-based technology to introduce a very small amount of ethylene inhibitor into the atmosphere around the avocados. And what that does is it alters the metabolism and the breathing rate of the avocado, and we're able to take control of it. We're able to slow it down so that the avocado respires more slowly, you know, loses less water, is less susceptible to disease, and ultimately then take that through the storage and transit process. And once that avocado then gets into a ripening environment, or once that ripening process starts to take place, that regulated metabolism actually results in a higher quality fruit after the fact as well. This is where that 2 to 4 days of ripe shelf life enhancement that Patrick was talking about comes from. So we have, you know, a fairly cool, completely non-invasive biotechnology here that allows us to mimic the natural biochemistry of the avocado, but in a way that we're able to control very selectively to target very specific ripening parameters, very specific dates, very specific times and temperatures, and be able to deliver that ripe window to the retailer and ultimately the consumer.
That's great. Thank you for that explanation. I'll have to read more about it, but I appreciate hearing that use of the technology.
Well, and admittedly, I tried to leave off the PhD level organic chemistry, but
well, I might call you up on that later.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a different conversation. All right, you guys. Well, that is about it. And I really applaud you both on finding each other and working together to make sure that we get to use these new technologies in the industry. And thank you very much. And I wish you the best.
That's it for this episode of PMA Takes on Tech. Thanks for allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. Be sure to check out all of our episodes at pma.com and wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe, and I would love to get any comments or suggestions on what you might want me to take on. For now, stay safe and eat your fruits and vegetables, and we'll see you next time.